What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for listening to Your Ex-Drinking Buddy. My name is Brennan Tassif. I'll be your host. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Check out the merch store at brennantcomedy.com/merch-store. And make sure you subscribe on YouTube as well. We'll put the shorts up there, the full video, the whole thing. Thank you so much for listening. I love it. I hope you love it. Subscribe on Patreon, too. We do bonus episodes. I do Tales from the Restaurant, where I talk about celebrities I've waited on and whether they're assholes or not, which is super fun. Also, we do a pre-show banter for my other show, Cheers from the Press Box with Joe Dorville. A lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on over there, too. Make sure you just subscribe everywhere, just all over the place. I greatly appreciate it. And if you're not leaving the mean comments, thank you for that. Maybe leave a couple nice ones.
Grab me a beer and grab him a coat. We about to sit for an hour, bullshit and tell jokes. And please don't mix it up, cause he done sobered up. Brennan T. Comedy on your social media feeds. And Brennan Tassif is your ex-drinking buddy.
Brennan Tassif is your
ex-drinking
buddy.
Brennan Tassif is your ex-drinking buddy.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Brennan Tassif is your ex-drinking buddy. I'm your host, Brennan Tassif. If you're new to the program, quick rundown of the show. I used to be everyone's favorite drinking buddy. It was my favorite thing to do, hang out with friends, get drunk, do drugs, get in all sorts of trouble, and then reminisce about those crazy stories. I am sober now, but it's still one of my favorite things to do, hang out with somebody and reminisce about the crazy old days. Most weeks I'll be joined by a guest. This week is no exception. All the way from Astoria, New York, Rob Riddle! Ah!
Wow.
What's up, dude?
How's it going?
Thanks. Good, man. Yeah. Before we get too far into anything, plug everything up front. The club, the special, the whole deal. Let everybody know.
Grove 34 is a comedy club in Queens. We're trying to do a lot of cool, interesting, and original things in comedy in New York City. And follow us on, you know, YouTube and Grove 34 Studio on Instagram. And then my personal is Almost Rob Rigo on Instagram. And you can find the links to my stand-up special and all my dumb shit on there.
You just had a special come out last year.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was great. It was a good learning experience. I'm proud of it. And then
we'll link it in the show notes, yeah, so people can go and check it out. Before we get too far into the special, because that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And also the club is, yeah, a huge deal.
Thanks.
Before we get too far into that, I ask all my guests this who are especially in an art of some sort. How did you find stand-up? How did you decide on doing stand-up?
You see someone do it, and you're like, that's fucking awesome. It made you I always use the example to non-comedians that like Dave Chappelle was like the first one that really like made me just, holy shit. Like, yeah, what is this thing? That's like, this is a, you know, just a person with a microphone that's like making me through, you know, a year after the special's been filmed in a different place, like through time and space, this man is contorting my, yeah, body with laughter. Like,
that's a great way to put it.
That's a very powerful thing for a single individual to do with just a microphone. And then like after Chappelle, I would say Louis was the guy who was like, oh, I actually see my brain kind of works like that sometimes. Okay. And I was just like, oh yeah, maybe that's something I could do. And then I just kind of watched a lot of stand up, and then you see it when you start watching it, then you see a lot of bad stand up, and you're like, yeah, I could do better than that. And you can't, but you can.
Were you going to, like, when did you decide like to try mics? Like, how did you find mics and stuff like that?
I mean, I just did like, yeah, like this, I started like my first ever open mic was in New Jersey. And then, okay, there's the Stress Factory there.
Okay.
And so I just went to like their open mic night.
How did you find it? Cause I love these little details, because it is, if you're not looking for it, it's not like an easy thing to like stumble into.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you gotta want to find it.
Yeah. I wanted to do it. It's something I've been wanting to try. I wanted to do it for like my high school, like talent show or some, okay, shit like that, but I never ended up doing it. So all through college, I wanted to try it.
Oh, so this is post-college when you were like, all right, let me do it.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, right at the end of my my senior year of college, like I did my first, got on stage, and then...
How'd it go?
I mean, it goes well, because you like you bring all your friends out, yeah, and you get drunk, and you're like, your first one always is pretty fun. I don't remember anything, so I'm sure it was terrible. But,
well, the reason I asked is because the first one I ever did, I This is 2009 in South Florida, and I was, again, same as you, like, in college.
Where,
and I was
where, like, South Florida?
Florida Atlantic University is where I went to college.
Okay.
So Fort Lauderdale area, okay. Boca. It's in Boca Raton, but yeah. I say Fort Lauderdale because yeah. that's easier for people. But yeah, same thing. It's like, I was like, I'm going to do this. And I actually had a similar experience where I would watch stand-up, and then I saw someone, and I was like, oh, I want to do that. Like, that seems cool. Because I would watch, like, Mitch Hedberg and Greg Giraldo and be like, this is hilarious. And to your point, I was like, they're using their words to elicit a human emotion, like mm-hmm. laughter.
Yeah.
But I was like, I can't, I don't think like that.
Yeah.
And then mine is kind of worn out now, but at the time it was huge. Mine was Dane Cook.
For sure.
When I saw Dane rip off his shirt and pour the water on him, I was like, oh, I want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then I found a mic and same, I went, got hammered, but I didn't have a ton of, like, I didn't invite a bunch of people cause I was nervous.
Yeah.
And it was brutal. I remember I got one laugh on something that was heinous because I thought, like, oh, I'm going to be like a shock jock guy.
Yeah.
And I got one laugh, but that one laugh, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. Like, this is the thing.
Yeah.
So you go up, you invite everybody.
Yeah.
Now, were you living in Jersey at the time? Did you have, like, a bunch of friends and family?
I joined the military in college. So I was just about to go move down to Virginia to start my first assignment. So I did it in New Jersey right before. But then I moved down to Virginia and I lived next to the Cozzy's Comedy Club.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that
spot? No, I've not. Yeah.
You can give them your avails, I'm sure. Yeah.
We were just talking about that before the mic went on, about all the spots you're doing. I might contact Cozzy's.
Yeah. It's like this. I have a deep affection for it because it was where I started, and the place is like a shithole, but it was like our shithole as like a young comic, we have, you know?
My home scene is Jacksonville, so I got plenty of those kind of places.
They were, that was just.
So did you, when you moved that down there, because as you mentioned, you're in the military. So are you like, I'm going to do what I have to do for my job, and then comedy is like kind of a hobby on the side? Or were you like, comedy is the thing I really want to do when I get done with this, so I'm going to like really focus on that? What was kind of your reasoning like behind your work ethic with comedy?
Yeah, you start, like, everybody starts comedy thinking that, like, you just start doing it and then you win, like, the comedy lottery.
Yeah.
Where it's just, like, some agents in the audience and like, this kid's got it.
When I moved to New York 4 years ago, I was like, I'm going to hang out at the Stand in the Cellar because I've been doing comedy a long time. And then those people are just going to be like, Brennan, do you want to get on stage?
Yeah.
Worst decision I made because I spent 4 years hanging out at a club where I had no, like, way to get past that because I wasn't at other clubs.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that was a terrible idea.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the process though. I think you should move to New York and not think too hard about what you should be doing. You should just throw yourself at
just
the wall.
Just do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do all the bad open mics, hang out at all the clubs that don't want you there.
Yeah. Let's go.
And then start to figure out where you actually can find a place to accelerate a little bit.
That's true. So you were at the comedy club, and did you have the idea of like, oh, I might win the comedy lottery?
Like very briefly, then you start doing it and, you know, I was working a job. So I was like, I thought I was going to stay in the military and I just thought it was going to be like kind of something I do. But I ended up, you know, just caring so much more about the comedy thing, even though I wasn't good. And not caring so much about, you know, my day job. And so that kind of, then I decided I wanted to try it and I wanted to like probably like 2 years in, and then that like third year, I was really just doing every mic I could in Virginia. And
are you traveling for these mics? Because that's what we did in Florida. You would drive like 2 hours south to Orlando, hit a bunch of mics there, then 3 hours west to Tampa. The next day you'd hit a bunch of mics there. You'd be staying on buddies' couches. And
it's
like,
not that crazy. We had most mics were like 30 to 40 minutes away.
Yeah.
And then you could drive an hour and a half up to Richmond. And then, you know, like if you were, there were some shows that like in Charlottesville, I was just kind of like just getting to the point of being a senior open micer by the time I left, but not really doing shows, but that's whatever.
And then when you leave Virginia, is that when you come back to New York?
I went to pilot training for the Air Force, which was in Texas, but I had like a year before that, almost a year. And so I came back up to New York and I tried it in 2015 to like do comedy in New York City. And I lived in fucking Jersey City.
Yeah.
Oh, it was,
where comics come when they move to New York.
So I would just...
How did that year go?
It was awful.
Really?
I mean, it was great. It was great. Great in that it was experience, but it was like I was taking a bus to a train, and it was like an hour and a half to get in to do like a mic at the Creek in the Cave.
Yeah.
And you'd get here and it would be like just a bunch of comics. And like the Creek in the Cave used to be, I tell people, it's like, it used to be like the cellar, but for like babies, you know, like you would have like the babies pretend like they were working jobs by like, with like the,
like when you put the
Easy Bake
like,
oven, you know?
Yeah. When you have like the toy, the Mattel, like kitchen set up and stuff like that. And they're like, I'm cooking eggs. And it's like, yes, you are.
Yes, you are
cooking eggs.
So I remember all the comics.
Even, I'm doing comedy. Yeah. Yes, you are.
Even comics that I'm friends with now, like back then, they would just like ignore you because it's just like, you're like, who the fuck are you?
I'm a veteran open micer.
I get up at the whatever shit bar show down the street. Like, you know who, like, you know, so that
you know who you're talking to.
Yeah, yeah,
dude, that's hilarious.
But also too, it's like there's also, you also realize how many fucking comedians there are here, and you're like, you can't, you don't have time to be nice to everybody. Like, you gotta just whatever.
It's a weird fact about New York.
Yeah.
But to this day, I do something comedy related probably 5 nights a week in the city. Yeah. After work, my restaurant is equal distances between the stand and the cellar. So after work, I'll go to one of the clubs. I do a lap around McDougal all the time, whether it's recording the podcast, doing open mics.
Yeah.
I try to do something comedy related 5 days a week. Yeah. And I still will get booked on shows where I go, I don't know a fucking person on this lineup. How is this possible?
Well, they don't stop. Like, it's just like the bottom is always just get filling up.
And I'm sure you see this owning a club, but like I see it at some of the mics I go to where people will just, all of a sudden you're looking around, you go, it's my, one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite movies, Starship Troopers, but it's like, who are all these kids?
Yeah.
And it's like, we're the old men now. It's like, oh my God. It's like, how the fuck did this happen?
It's crazy.
Because there's always a new crop. Like every 3 to 6 months, there's a new crop of 20-somethings coming from the Midwest or from the South. Yeah. And they're like, boy, oh boy, I'm going to punch my comedy lottery ticket.
But the other good thing is like, if you stick to it and you have a bit of a positive attitude and you do, you know, are making some progress, every 6 months you have a new group of people who you could convince to think you're as great as, you know, like
they people see, come up to me at mics and they're like, hey, I'm working on this new joke. And I go, I'm at the mic with you. What do you want me to do?
But I mean, well, you could give them advice, I'm sure. But
I do.
Yeah, I do.
Or I'm like, well, as the old sage, would you say as the senior open micer?
Yeah,
the
senior open micer, yeah.
The senior class. So what propelled you to end up getting, because Grove 34 is one of the best, you guys have that hilarious sign out front, which says eighth best comedy club
I think it's going to finally come down after when I get back from this next deployment that I'm going on. I love that sign. Derek,
it's my favorite thing.
Derek hates it, and he's always hated it, which makes me love it more. But I think it's time to do another.
Well, because you guys, for those of you listening who don't live in the New York area, like Grove 34, it's not that old, but it's like you guys have had everybody. Joe Lish, Shane Gillis, Mark Norman, like Sean Patton. And then all you guys who run it are also all comedians, correct?
Yeah, we're all comedians of some sorts, you know. The other guys are more like, you know, internet-based kind of comics, but whatever that means. We all have to. I don't know. They don't get on stage and do stand-up with the same, you know.
Yeah.
Their whole and their soul is a little bit different.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. Yeah. What was the precipice though to start Grove 34?
It's just the obvious reason is like you want to, like, I was producing shows not super well. And so I was like, well, if I can't produce a show well, I'm sure I can do a club.
That logic checks out.
Yeah.
Because for people listening who don't live in the New York area or who aren't even in comedy, especially in New York, to the point we were making earlier, it's very hard to get on stage.
Yeah.
Like to get up, you either have to your point, produce your own show or you have to be passed at clubs. And even if you're passed at clubs, you still aren't going to, like, it's no guarantee you're going to be getting up 3, 4, 5 times a week.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a trend that I have seen lately where comedians will kind of all band together, whether it's like 2 of them or 4 of them or 10 of them.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, hey, let's just open our own club.
Yeah.
But Grove 34 was one of the first places to do it because I've seen 4 or 5 now, but you guys were the first ones there.
Yeah. I call them like the pop-up comedy clubs or the boutique comedy clubs.
That's exactly.
I would say like, yeah, if of this like era of the comedy club, I think Tiny Cupboard kicked it off.
Yeah.
And like Sesh a little bit. And then we were like pretty close after Sesh.
Cause I had heard of you guys before I had heard of Sesh, but that just might be my,
we could have been open before them. I don't know, but it was around the same time. And then it was, you know, Flophouse and Bushwick Comedy Club and QED.
And Highline now.
Highline, yeah. Yeah. Which one's your favorite?
Growth 34.
besides Growth 34.
Well, no. I mean, to be honest, because I'm friends with Scott yeah. Hall, who's also a part of the Growth 34 crew. He's been on this podcast a couple times. But the idea of...
Oh, he's got some good ex-drinking stories.
he had to do two episodes.
Yeah.
We got through one, and I go, so you're going to come back next week?
Yeah. We're still working through some of those episodes.
But this whole idea of... The thing I loved about it, and the reason why I did my show there, and why I want to continue to do shows there, was the idea of, like, it's not... Because there are no house shows. It's kind of like you guys do your... It's you either have headliner shows or like the roast battles you do a lot or like things like that. And that's what I liked about it, because it's not all these comics at like my level or above my level, like all cutting each other's throats trying to get on the house shows, like trying to. It's kind of this setup where it's like, yeah, if you want to do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you don't. And I actually appreciate that a lot more because I'm a grown up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a 22-year-old who just moved here, who has his dad paying his rent while I'm trying to find myself. Like, I got shit I'm doing. So it is nice to have a place where it's just kind of like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
This is okay, Brennan, this is how much it's going to cost. Boom. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that kind of what's the like business aspect of it. So that's why I would say Grove is my favorite, only because all those other places, I love a lot of the guys that own them and girls, but the problem is they all have house shows and they're all booking, you know, you're booking two or three shows a night. Five nights a week, everything can get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm busy, dude.
Yeah. You know, we have learned like the hard way that we want to do stuff that works and we want to do stuff that's good. And like throwing shit at a wall is a good strategy at sometimes and it's a bad strategy at others. So we do want to create more. We want to create opportunities for comics to get up. Like that's our, and like, and we want to have people coming to our club and working out material and doing stuff. But at the same time, it's like, this isn't Manhattan. This isn't like McDougal Street where you can just like, you know, bark people in all the time.
Yeah, you can bark in half a club. Yeah.
And yeah, it's like I know the people like walking down the street. Like they're like, Rob, what the fuck? I was here 2 weeks ago. I'm not going. Like, don't try to fucking.
I'm not coming again.
Guilt me into the coming tonight. Like it's just or you know the whatever. Even like you can't flyer because you'll get fined for that. So it's like we've had to take a different kind of approach, and then. With like, you know, you have comics want to produce their own shows and we've tried that too. And it's like a lot, you know, most comics just were like, you know, we'll do a poster on Microsoft Paint and then just like show up the day of the show with a bunch of favors that they offered their other friends to get on. And so that's not good because like, again, we have it's a smaller brand. So we want to be really careful with like, you know, the audience that we do have and try to make it like, hey, if you walk through our door, it's going to be a good time. It's going to be comics that care about this and comedy that's good.
Well, and that's the thing that kind of blows my mind is to your point, the work ethic of some people where it's like when I did the show there, I went out of my way and I was like reached out to like Caitlin Palufo and Max Fine, they're both seller comics.
Yeah.
And then my friend Espy, who like does comedy all over the city. And like, I was like, oh, I want, because it's my name on it.
Yeah.
So it's one. So to, similar to what you're saying about it's Grove's name on the show, I felt the same way where I was like, yeah, if I'm branding this with like Brennan Tassif and friends or whatever, I was like, I need it to be a good show.
Yeah.
Because I know my girlfriend and her brother are going to invite a bunch of people. Yeah. And if a bunch of people come and they go, that fucking sucked, they're not coming to anything ever again.
Yeah.
And so it is crazy to me that sometimes people will be like you were saying, like, you know, you'll make a flyer on ChatGPT and then just be like, yeah, I'll just show up. It's like, that's not, you got to do the legwork, man.
Yeah. I've been working on our poster game right now. Cause I want to like, I've been doing a lot of Adobe Photoshop. I'm going to, you know, I have this whole thing where I'm going to try to do like 100 posters to try to find like our new poster.
Yeah.
And it's just this thing where it's like the poster probably you could argue doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
Like if the show's good enough, it does. Like you don't, you could just like Instagram, hey,
Joe does it all the time. Yeah, where he literally in his stories, it's just text that says like this show and then a link.
Yes.
And it's like, okay,
it doesn't matter. But we know that like you don't judge a book by its cover, but we also know that everybody literally does.
Yeah.
And for you as the producer, as the comedian, as the artist, if you're creating something, and the first thing that people see about you, they don't have this, they don't have a rapport, they don't have like, they don't know what it's going to be. If your first thing that you're showing people is something that you clearly put no time and effort into, it's just like, you're just setting a trend for yourself mm-hmm. to like do it. So it's like, start with the poster and then start with the, then the continue with like the lineup in your marketing and make it so it's like that when the comics show up to the show, they're feeling an audience that is ready to see good comedy.
That's the other thing,
and
too.
Then they're gonna bring it more yep. too. Like, cause it's like if you invite you get Caitlin Palufo on some fucking bar show, and she's like, fucking fine, I'll do it. And she gets there, and there's six people in there. She's gonna be looking at her notes. She's gonna be trying new shit. It's not yeah. gonna be you didn't get Caitlin Palufo.
Well, that was the
you
fun gotta, thing is like when yeah. when I had the show, the comics that showed up were like, oh, like this is a show.
Yeah.
Like, oh, people
are
here.
It's you,
like,
yes.
Yeah.
And we're it's doing, like, all right, let's do comedy.
Because I remember even one of the comics came up to me and was like, hey, are you cool? Because, you know, it's my name on the poster. Yeah. I rented the space. So they're coming to me.
Yeah.
Because even though I think of myself as a comic first, I am the producer of this show. Yeah. So they're coming up to me and they're like, hey, are you cool if I do new stuff? And I'm like, yeah, do whatever you want. Yeah. And they're like, are you sure? Because there's like, this is like pretty full. Like, yeah. are you cool?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. I don't give a shit. Like, let's party. But. To your point, the fact that it was a show to where people felt like they had to be like, yeah, you're cool with this, right? It means that it was a good show.
Yeah.
Because they weren't just, because I've done so many shows in the city where someone will book me on something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, boy, oh boy, got a show. And then you show up and it's so disheartening to be like, there's six people here. Like, I'm going to do it because I'm a professional and this is the job. Mm-hmm. But it's not as much fun as like when you show up somewhere and you're like, oh, there's like 40 people here and like they all want to have a good time. Yeah. And we're like ready to have a good time.
A lot of it, I'm sure you've had comics tell you, or like, you know, bigger comics than us tell you like, hey, like start, like say no to stuff, or some comics like say don't go to mics anymore.
Yeah.
Just because it's just like, because you do have to protect your soul, because your job as a comedian is to bring the fun to the room, right? And if you're not having fun,
they can feel it.
You can feel it.
The audience can feel it.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. And I've gone back and forth with people about this since I moved to New York, because I had done the bar shows where in Oklahoma City, where the Thunder game is on and you're like, hey, comedy. And everyone's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And like, I've done the shows in Florida where no one's listening, or there's two people sitting at the bar and you're literally just basically, it's a show, but you're just doing an open mic with your friends. Like, I've done all that.
Yeah.
So when I moved to New York, I was like, the hang is so much more important than the mics.
Yeah.
Because I had been doing it for a while. Now, if you hadn't been doing comedy, you need to get your reps in. That's important.
Yeah.
But for me, I was like, oh, it's the hang, which is more important. Like getting connections and getting to know people.
100%.
And this is an argument I get into with people all the time, or just a disagreement where they go, no, you have to go to open mics and get the reps. I go, yeah, but if I'm going to an open mic and doing my tight five that I already know is my tight five, that I know works as my tight five, and everyone's heard it at the open mic and nobody laughs, now in my head, it's not my tight five anymore.
Yeah.
And that could be more detrimental then, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we could move on from this, but I would just say that
I love talking comedy.
I love comedy.
I get comments all the time where they're like, you talk comedy for 47 minutes.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
my bad.
But yeah, to your point, I think if you're trying new stuff, open mics are great. But if you're just like, oh, I've got a spot tonight and I want to work on this 5 minutes, you're better off, and you know it's a good 5 minutes just doing it on your own.
And what season that you're in as a person. Like, you know, when you first get here, you should be just kind of overextending yourself.
Yeah.
Then you should kind of come back and like find like some stuff that works. And then maybe you have a point where it's like, all right, I'm going to ramp up for this taping or for this thing. And it's like, I'm going to just start doing everything again. And like, you know, so you just got to feel what's actually.
Well, and you will get to a point.
Yeah.
If you are you made a great point earlier where you said you should really get out and try everything so you can kind of figure out where you fit best.
Yeah.
If you get to that point, because I've been in New York now 4.5 years, and sometimes I feel like, what am I doing here? This was a horrible mistake.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, I'm going to Denver for 5 shows next month, and there are people now, legitimate club managers and stuff, legitimate clubs in the city that I can call and be like, listen, I'm doing a bunch of spots in Denver.
Yeah.
Can I run 10 minutes? And they'll go, sure.
Yeah.
because they trust me enough to be like, yeah, you might not be a paid regular here, but we trust you to like come up and run your 10.
Yeah.
Which is so much better than like trying to cobble like 25 minutes together at five different open mics doing 5 minute sets. Yeah. To just like if you're in it long enough, you get that kind of rapport with people.
Yeah.
All right. We got to move on from comedy.
Okay.
Let's talk about you.
Okay.
When, where did you go to high school? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in South Amboy, well, Perth Amboy, New Jersey. I went to high school in South Amboy, New Jersey.
Okay, so you're a Jersey kid.
Yeah, there is a, what's her fucking name? Kelly, I think.
Shout out Kelly, I think.
There's a female comic that went to, man, I can't.
The same high school?
The same high school in New York City, yeah. She was like a sophomore when I was a senior, so I don't remember her at all.
Yeah.
But it's crazy. Yeah. Like every time we see each other, we start talking about the teachers who got arrested for doing stuff. You know?
Oh, really? So you went to that kind of high school?
Yeah, well, it was.
Well, I only say that because I'm from Florida, so everyone's like, oh, Florida. And it's like, that happens everywhere. Right?
Sure,
that's not just stereotype people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So were you a popular kid in high school?
No.
No?
No. No.
Dork, nerd?
Yeah,
what
no,
was going on?
I mean, I could vibe with like a Y group of people, but I wasn't invited to the coolest parties.
Okay,
sure. Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
what I wanted to ask. When was the first time like you went to a party? Was that in high school?
Like a drink party?
Yeah,
I guess high school, but it wasn't.
No, a Pokemon Go party. Yeah, drinking party. Well, because the reason I ask is because I have this persona now where, you know, I'm a big gregarious guy and a lot of people tend to like me. You know, some people hate me, but a lot of people like me. But that's not, like, when I was in high school, I got the shit kicked out of it. Like, I got bullied constantly. I didn't go to my first, like, real party until, like, really late in my senior year. And that's only because my twin sister was having a party.
Yeah.
And she was like, hey, do you want to come? And I was like, oh, my God, you're inviting me to, like, a party where we're going to drink?
Yeah.
And so I always like to ask people because that kind of shaped me moving forward.
Yeah.
Or then I got to college and I was like, no, I'm not going to get bullied. I'm going to be one of the cool kids. And it worked. And that's what happened. But I remember all through high school, like, screaming at people being like, drinking is terrible. Like, why would you do that? And then I drank and I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So for you, as you said, you weren't like a crazy popular kid. Were you still like, did you have like a close clique of friends? Were you playing sports? Were you like in clubs? Like, what were you doing?
I played soccer badly. my school was small too. It was like 125 graduating class.
Wow, that's tiny.
Yeah, it wasn't so we kind of all knew each other. What's the question?
So like when was the first time you experienced like what the movies are all about, like the Superbads and the Project X's and all that?
Yeah, no, we really didn't have much cool shit going on.
So you just that just wasn't a thing.
Yeah, okay. Like we had, you know, parties, obviously, like, you know, everyone had like a fucking Sweet 16 or whatever, and everyone went to those, but even that like we were kind of good kids. Most of us were not drinking at 16. I probably like
that's actually I'm going to be very honest with you. That's not the answer we get a lot on this show.
Sure. I mean, I maybe around that time I like went to a friend's house and like had four Bud Lights and like was whoa. But
so around 16, you would try beer and stuff. But.
Yeah, but I never really got into drink. And then, you know, like my family's Italian, so they would let me have a glass of wine at dinner or whatever.
See, and that's another interesting thing too. I've learned doing this show is. When people grow up in, whether it's a European style family, like Italians or Irish or Eastern European, which is like what my family is, drinking has such a different categorization than it does like just being like an Americanized family.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of people who are like, no, we got to party, like die young, leave a beautiful corpse. Like we're going to fucking rage. And they're saying this at like 16, 17. I know some of those people.
Yeah.
I am related to some of those people.
Yeah.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
But then I meet people where, like you said, like you're Italian, and I've had people on who are either Italian or Irish or Russian, and they're like, no, like drinking is just a part of our culture, so it was never like a, we have to do this now.
Yeah.
So that was kind of your experience as well.
Yeah, but then college happened, and I guess like, because like wanting that party experience or wanting to be, you know, at a cool party, I definitely was like going to frat parties, which like retrospect, you're like, this is so fucking terrible.
And you weren't in a frat. You were just going to the parties?
No, I was parties. Just going to the parties. Yeah, not joining. But then, and so I drank in college, you know, pretty regularly, but also not like now I'm in, like, now I'm a pilot and a comedian in New York City. Like, there's so much more booze in my life now. It's just like everything is.
So you are a pilot. Like, yeah. You fly the plane.
Yeah.
So is it true that there are so many redundancies that those things are very hard to take out of the sky? Because I am terrified of flying. And everyone is always like, don't be such a bitch. Like, it's fine. Like, this thing's not coming down.
I mean, it is a very,
I would really like you just to say yes, and move on.
It is a very safe form of transportation.
You're like, well, yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. I got to fly to Denver.
It's really not. Honestly, like flying, I used to do a show up in Connecticut, mm-hmm. and I used to be in a flight instructor up there. And so I would, before the show, if the comics got there early, I would let them fly a plane and land the plane.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was fun.
Get out of here, really?
They showed up with so much confidence to the show after doing it. It's like,
dude.
Yeah.
That's a genius thing.
Yeah, it was good.
Landing the plane is the hardest part, correct? That's what I've heard.
No, it's...
You are just knocking down all these things that I've thought I knew. I love it.
The having like good hands in the plane is definitely something that is like kind of the more like artistic part of it, where it's like you can't just like know it or not know it. Like, you do have to get a good feel for the plane you're flying, but it's not that hard. What kids can do in video games, like the finesse they have playing fucking Fortnite now, is like way more than you need to land a plane.
Because I remember being, I'm 37, so I was a kid when Flight Simulator first came out, and my brother had like the joystick set up and the whole thing, and I remember being like, I was kind of like, you just throttle up, you pull up, you throttle down a little bit, and you go.
Trees get smaller, trees get bigger. That's it.
But I have, because I watch a lot of like Star Wars and like that kind of stuff, and it's interesting because the pilots, to your point about the finesse, it's always very much like a quirky guy who's always just like, I'm a leaf on the wind, and I always thought that was bullshit, but you're saying that there is a little bit of, a tiny bit of truth to that?
For sure, but it's, I mean, like, having good hands, like, that's something that's, like, you know, it's definitely a skill. It's definitely something that some people are a little better at than others. It's something you can always work on, but for the most part, like, it's also not the most important thing, really. Like, there's, like, maybe if you're flying fighter jets, like, which I don't, maybe there's something there, but most of the time, it's, like, most people, even if you're going to land the plane safely. Like, it's not that first. And then also your autopilot's flying now most of the time anyway. So whatever.
I know that's true, but still when I'm on flights and I see the pilot come out to go to the bathroom, I'm like, who's flying the plane? Flying the plane?
Well, there's a second pilot that's got to stay in there.
I'm not kidding. Like, I'm terrified of flying.
The hardest part about being a pilot is just like having all of the information, like having everything in your head, like when you're doing it. Like, so like to know, be aware of all the rules, be aware of everything you know, be aware of everything you don't know, and then fly the plane, and then like not, and then moments where it does get stressful to just like maintain a calm and collected like order of things and to like move through it, you know, safely.
Yeah.
That's where it's like, you can't just have someone who's new doing it. And over time, through experience, that's where you're like, that's what you're paying for when you have a fucking 10,000 hour Delta pilot.
God, this is, I could talk to you about flying all day long. It's one of those things where when I'm scared of something, I want to learn as much as humanly possible about it.
It's mostly the wings, like they've done like tests where like they've bent like the new like carbon fiber wings on like a Boeing 787. Like, you could bend them like almost to
vertically
here, and like they won't break. So really? Like, turbulence is not as crazy of a thing as people think it is.
Well, case in point, when we were flying back from Chicago recently, there was that bad storm last week.
Yeah.
And they're like, we can't go. And I, you know, we all have radar now.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, they're going to, like, we were supposed to leave at 12:30. I was like, we're not going to leave till like 7:30 at night, but we're going to leave because we can all see that the storm clears up. And dude, that one was like the whole way.
Yeah.
But so my whole time, and especially when I'm in a window seat looking at the wing, I'm like, it's going to snap. It's going to snap right off.
Well, stay buckled up, because like you could hit like a pocket and like, you know, there's people die, like just like you go negative G and your head like gets slammed against the ceiling.
Yeah, so I have heard of that, because I'm always one of those people that gets frustrated before we take off. And then like the pilot's like ready to rock. He's like, prepare for departure, ready to go. And then some asshole will like get up to go use the bathroom. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Oh, yeah, that guy's a fucking asshole.
Or like when we're in the air and like you hit a little rough patch and then the pilot literally comes on, he goes, we're going through some rough air. seatbelt sign is on, get in your seats, buckle up. And then you'll see someone like go up to get their laptop. And in my head, because my dad says he's seen it before where they'll hit a pocket and someone will slam it in the ceiling. Yeah. I'm always like, the pilot should just be like, hey, I said buckle up. Like, just give him a little,
I don't think the insurance company would be going there.
Could you imagine if you guys had, like, a camera in the back? You're like, all these motherfuckers are standing.
Well, they have full, like, computer data for everything that happened. So if like someone dies, they're gonna pull that and they'll see like a fast push down and they'll be like,
hey, what's going on here?
Investigation. Yeah.
Do you is the last question on the flying thing, and then we're gonna get back to the stories. Is the weight thing real?
The what weight thing?
Like, so when I get on a commercial flight, sometimes there'll be a bunch of empty seats and they go, no, we can't move you there because of the weight distribution in the plane. Is that a real thing?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah. I don't know like the specifics of that thing, but like, yeah, the weight and balance of the plane is huge. Like you have to, the CG moves back and forth with as the fuel burns, and then as like depending on how heavy the plane is, it also determines how much runway you need to take off or land.
Okay. So that is a real thing. I was like, you're fucking with me. This plane's a boat in the air. It doesn't, like, if I move two seats over, it's not going to matter. But if enough people do move, then it will matter. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Well, do you fly big planes or little planes?
I fly a medium sized plane. It's a C-130. Yeah. 90 passenger. Or
90, oh, there you
91.
Go. Yeah. Hey, I know all about medium sized. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So you did send me some stories. I want to talk about the birthday party. The menace of a birthday party.
Like,
was this in here or was this back in college?
This was in New York.
Okay.
There was a, do you know Tony Sikowski?
No.
He's a comic, cool guy. Okay. He had a...
God, this is what I mean about how big the scene is.
Yeah, he's been doing it for a little bit. So he's a cool guy. He was having a birthday party, also a relapse party.
Okay.
He was like planning on just starting drinking again. Done being sober. And he was like, I was
totally out. Understand.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I showed up. I showed up with, ready to participate.
Yeah.
In his, you know,
if we're gonna
future
do this,
spiral.
Let's
whatever.
Do this.
Yeah. But then I was also going through like a divorce. And so there was definitely a little bit of like anger, trauma based anger that was like deep down kind of in there. And I just, like, I got there, was getting hammered. And then, like, I was with Dan Frank. Do you know him?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan Frank. So we were drinking, and I go to get a beer, and we're, like, waiting at this, you know, New York City bar where there's fucking 500 people like, sitting there.
3-4-D.
Yeah,
you can't
get
anyone's attention.
And so I'm waiting to get in, and then this fucking, like, chick and, like, her boyfriend, like, kind of, like, she, like, pushes in front of us just doing, like, the hot girl shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, like, I, of course,
so the party is at a bar.
At a bar.
Okay,
And then I basically, I was just, like, just in the, you know, in the spirit world of, like, you know, with mixing with my, you know, my anger at that point. And I was just like, fuck no. And I just like pushed my arm and like pushed her back.
Okay.
Like, just like, it wasn't like, I didn't like touch her like with the anything. Like, it was just,
yeah,
but,
no,
just like,
yeah.
I was just, a, like just a, like, hey, a, hey, no.
What are you doing? Yeah.
And she fucking flipped. And her boyfriend like flipped on. First of all, Dan's gay. I should have just been like, I'm getting a drink for my boyfriend. Like, it would have been totally fine. But me being like a straight dude, they were able to like just run it.
You're like, back up.
Yeah.
Are you a fighter normally when you drink?
No. Okay. I'm usually pretty fun.
Yeah.
But
like, that'll be the name of the episode. Yeah, usually pretty fun.
I could spiral to sad sometimes, but...
Same. I'm actually the same. Where I'm normally a fun guy.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'll spiral into sadness.
Yeah.
Towards the end, it was just all sadness, but that's why I got sober. Yeah. But there were times I remember going to bars and stuff, especially in college, because I played college football. And so when I was done playing college football after 2 years, because I got so many concussions, I was still a pretty big guy. So you go to bars and people just want to fuck with you.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, yeah, you think you're fucking tough? And at the time... I was drunk and I was like, yeah, I am fucking tough. And then it would just turn into like a, which didn't happen very often, but it was one of those things where I would like look for it sometimes.
Yeah,
like,
Please, I mean,
somebody say something.
Yeah.
Not anymore though. Now we're happy. We're happy people. We're great. I wanted to ask, do you still like to get after it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. I'm questioning my joke is that I've started to realize that I love drinking. It's such an important part of my life in New York City, because like, this is what you do. It's like one of the things New York City, the two things New York City has is fucking food and bars.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And you pay so much to be here. And it's like I'm a social person and an extrovert, and I want to be out and being around the world. And I love being at the bars. They have so much great character here in New York, and we have great fucking beer and cocktails here. Yeah. It's just like, enjoy it.
Have you tried that new one, the Honey Fits?
Honey Fits is good, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
really good. I've never been inside, but Tracy's gone there with her friends a few times.
And yeah.
That's the one thing on this block, we don't have like a ton of bars.
Yeah.
So it is cool to have like a spot to go to.
Oh, yeah.
And every time I get off work, because between the restaurant and comedy, I'm normally getting back really late, and there's always a ton of people outside.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, like, even at, like, you know, like, even at nights I'm trying to take it easy, but if I go out and do stand-up, it's like, I'm gonna sit through... sit through six sets sober, or God forbid you do an open mic. Like, I can't be sober at an open mic.
Dude, it is so... I love that you bring this point up, because I don't drink anymore, and it is one of the most...
Yeah.
Normally, it doesn't cross my mind, but there's so many times when I do those shitty shows that we're talking about where I'm like, dude, I wish I still drank, because this is hard to fucking get through.
It's hard to get through. Yeah.
And then they expect you to like stay, like to support.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Once you make it as a comic and like you're past at clubs, they expect you to come into your set and leave.
Yeah.
But like when you're starting out, they're like, no, you're going up second, but you need to stay for all 14 comics on this bringer. And you're like, well, no. This isn't, no. I just saw all of their sets at the open mic 2 days ago. No.
Yeah.
So I couldn't imagine, like, I can't imagine, because I do it sober.
Yeah.
But like, if I was a drink guy still, I'd be fucking wasted at all this shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It sucks.
Have you ever gone up hammered?
Yeah.
Other than your first open mic?
Oh, yeah.
And I've asked that question to a lot of people. Sometimes it's good because people are like, oh, I was loose. It was a great set. Sometimes it goes poorly. What was your experience?
I go up hammered all the time.
You're like, it's kind of my thing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely
you're comfortable with it.
There's definitely a sweet spot where you can, you know, where I am actually like, you know, a little bit looser after a couple and whatever, but you don't have the same like recall and memory. You'll forget stuff, and then also you're not as like you it's not as consistent, so you can't like trust, like if you're trying to be a professional comedian, you cannot rely on like a couple beers to get you into like that sweet fun spot, like, because like sometimes it really works and I'm like super fun and I'm having a ton, like, all right, I'm kind of miserable, let me drink three beers, get on stage, and now I'm having a good time, and it shows in my performance. But it's like, but then you see there's so many bad shows that happen from just being like, oh, like you're just so slow, or you're like just off, like
slurring. That was always my problem, because I've only been sober 7 years and I started doing comedy in 2009. So there are plenty of shows where I'm just blacked out.
Yeah.
And they're like lighting me and I'm like yelling at them, like, come get me off the fucking stage.
Oh, God.
And it's like a disaster.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. I wanted to ask you, talking about stand-up, because this is the last thing we'll talk about, but doing, because you did the special.
Yeah.
And we've talked about how you got into comedy and stuff like that, but I'm interested, the last thing I want me to know and for the listeners to know is, because you kind of did this all soup to nuts like yourself.
Yeah.
So what was that process like? Because I did that with the one-man show. Obviously, I've done that with producing shows and stuff, but what was it like to be like, I'm going to film this and put this out? Like, take us through that.
I think that
like when did you when in your head were you like, oh, I'm gonna do this?
I think as a comedian, but also just any kind of artist, at some point, like if you've been doing it for a while, you need to publish the book.
Yeah.
So it's like time to just like, and for comedy, like the stand-up special still is, and it actually has had a resurgence now that YouTube is like, it's okay to just put your shit on YouTube.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because for a long time it was like, don't do that. Yeah.
So for me, it was like, I have all these jokes, It's been hard to write new stuff and move on from them, even though I know I'm a better comic than mm-hmm. these jokes are now.
Yeah.
And so I just like, but it's like always been like, it's not completely ready yet, or this part has always been like a little bit bad or whatever.
Yeah.
And then so I think like, you know, date on the calendar, which I did, I moved it like 3 times, but it's like, put a date on the calendar, make the ticket link, even for like a year out.
Yeah.
And just like put it whatever.
Well, that's what I had to do for my one man show because same thing is I would tell people these stories and they'd be like, that's crazy. You should do a one man show. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I kind of started writing it, but not really.
Yeah.
But then I hired someone to be the director.
Yeah.
And then I paid for the theater.
Yeah.
And it was a theater off Broadway. Like you say that, but people listening who don't live here don't understand. Like in New York, it's not that hard to get a theater off Broadway because there's so many theaters off Broadway. Sure. But it is But it is one of those things where it's like, okay, now I paid, you know, the $1,000 to the theater for the deposit to like put down. It's like, now we have to do it.
You have to do
You have to.
You have to do it. Yeah.
So for you, because you have the club already, you have the space.
Yeah.
Was it easier for you to just be like, actually, I don't want to do it right now. I just want to move it.
Or
were people like buying tickets and you're like, okay, I kind of have to.
Yeah, I made the link. I bought, people bought tickets. I had my, you know, I told the guys I'm working with that we're going to shoot that day and like, they're ready. They're getting ready to do that. And so, you're just putting a date on the calendar so that you have to show up and be ready. And it's like, you know, there's so many comics I think will drag through without a deadline for so long and then like wondering why they're not like haven't, you know, finished anything.
Why hasn't this worked?
Yeah.
So did you, how many cameras did you do?
We did four. And
four
we,
cameras?
We rented these anamorphic lenses. So if you watch it on YouTube, it's like, it's like smaller than even the screen because it's like, so actually it's like the YouTube has like now like the smaller screen, but it's like super wide.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then.
Unnecessary, but it's unique. It's a unique
thing. How did you get that? Did you just know people who had all this stuff or did you reach out to people?
Well,
that was the hardest part for me was like finding a film crew and stuff because I don't fucking know anybody.
Yeah. Lex, he's also a minor partner at Grove. He's a videographer.
Oh, so you had it. You were set.
Yeah. And then we rented the lenses. You can rent them for like $100.
Who did the editing?
Lex did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that was the other thing too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Lex is.
I fucking hate these jokes.
Seriously, watch like watch my special, see if you like the editing, but like Lex does a great fucking job. Like,
yeah.
And he's, you know, he did it for like $600, which is like,
that's awesome.
Nothing.
Well, cause I'm okay on Adobe. Like that's how I do all this.
Yeah.
And I do all this editing myself. I had one of my buddies, shout out Joe, Isidore, who I host the sports podcast with. He's an editor.
Yeah.
So he did all my editing and he sent me the raw files back. And I remember one day I was like, well, let me just open them up. Let me just see how like much more work he did than what I normally do. And dude, it's like layer after layer after layer. And I'm like, oh, I couldn't fucking.
You gotta be kidding me.
And also just hearing your fucking joke. Like you get to hear it so much. It's just like, I will 100% pay someone to do that. I'll cut my clips, but besides that.
Yeah. You know. Well, even sometimes with my clips, I'm like, this sucks. Well, and especially too now with like the way social media is, because I've had friends, I'm like, I do like a lot of the same bits because the places I'm getting up, they're like, make sure you do your tight whatever, tight 10 or tight 5. So a lot of times it's the same bits and I'll switch some in and out. But the only time I get to really stretch my legs is when I feature for Matt because I get to do 25 minutes and Matt's the headliner. So he's like, just make it good. But like don't bomb, but do whatever you want. And so that's the only time I really get to stretch out. So I have so many of the same bit, so many different ways. Yeah. And then my friends are like, how many people saw it? And I'm like, a few thousand. And they go, there's 300 million people on Instagram. Put it out again. Put it out again.
Yeah.
Put it out again. But to your point, by like the third time I'm cutting it from a different set, I'm like, I fucking hate this joke.
I hate this joke.
This isn't even funny. Why are people laughing? This is terrible.
Yeah.
Dude, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for coming
on.
Yeah,
man. Thanks.
Plug everything one more time.
Almost Rodrigo, Grove 34 Studio, and come see us at Grove 34 in Astoria, Queens. Best neighborhood.
Right on 34th Street.
New York, yeah.
Thank you everybody so much for listening at Brennan T Comedy on all social media, BrennanTComedy.com. I will be at the Denver Comedy Lounge the 26th and 27th. We're doing 5 shows with the great Matt Fulcheron and get your merch at the merch store. We'll talk to y'all next week. Boom. Dude, that was great, man.
Thanks for having me.
Dude.